This is Dear Analyst, episode number 59, and I'm super excited today to have Priyanka Samra from Workbench. She is a VC analyst there, and today we're going to be talking all about go-to-market strategies, data-driven companies, and some trends that she sees in the space. So Priyanka, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Al. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think we actually met in person in New York, like sometime in 2019 at a meetup. And I think I started reading your blog, which we'll talk about later in the show, which kind of reminded me to like reach out to you to see if we can have you on the show. So I think that's how we first met, right?
Yeah, I meet up around Union Square. Feels like ages ago, but that was like, 2 years ago.
Yeah, totally. Well, so I guess we'll just go right into it. And I wanted to learn more about what Workbench is and what you do on the team.
Yeah, so I'm Priyanka. I'm an analyst at Workbench, where I cover our investment in data infrastructure and developer tools. So I focus on sourcing, diligence, and research across these areas. And at a high level, Workbench is an early stage enterprise-focused VC firm based here in New York. We take a unique thesis-driven approach to investing. So we flip the traditional VC model upside down, and we do that by first validating Fortune 500 IT pain points through our extensive corporate network. And then we go and invest in the most promising companies that are addressing those challenges. Mm-hmm. Our sweet spot is at the seed two stage, where you have a live product, you're early on your go-to-market. And it's where we like to come to help founders supercharge their early go-to-market motion and help them win those key early enterprise customers.
Great. And I think one thing I also wanted to call out just from my experience with Workbench is Workbench used to host these really amazing in-person meetups in New York City. I'm talking about like 100, 150 people would show up to these events, and now they're virtual, of course. What has your experience been with like participating in these events, meeting people? Because I've gotten so much value from going to these events in the past, and continue to go, but curious about your experience being on the inside.
I think, like you said yourself, back in the day when everything was live, a bigger opportunity to meet people in real time and build real connections with them, right? And so I do miss that, but now that we move to the virtual setting, I feel like we're able to reach a much wider audience across the states. So it's not just people who can make it in New York, but everyone across the globe, really. And in my experience, have met a ton of founders and other investors, and have built really good relationship with people. And these are folks that you're connecting in real life, making real friendship. And so, it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, and just from another personal story about this, I think this was a enterprise meetup that Workbench was hosting. And it was, I believe, at the AWS loft in Soho at one point. And I think there was too many people that went to the event, so I couldn't even get in. It was like trying to get into like the hottest club in New York, and AWS, they wouldn't even let people in. People were standing outside waiting to get in. So it just goes to show how hot and how vibrant this enterprise community is in New York. So I think Workbench is like kind of like in the heart of like where all the action's happening. So it's a really exciting space.
For sure.
So given your focus on data tools, I'm curious, what are some characteristics that you've seen that make a data tool or company enterprise ready, since that's what your company, your VC focuses on?
Yeah. So when you're building for the enterprise, I'd say at a very high level, there are three core features that are essential for enterprise adoption. Mm-hmm. So the first one would be security, being able to demonstrate forward, your customers' data is so critical. This means getting your SOC 2 certification. And then from a scale standpoint, when you think of the sheer scale at which some of these large organizations are operating at, a few things that you'll need to think about is, you know, how do you build something that can grow and scale as the organization grows in size? This means embedding the right level of support into the product so that it's easy to maintain, and it also reduces some of the admin overhead. And then the platform itself needs to be robust so it can handle the increasing demands on the systems. And then, you know, the enterprise is complex and has a whole web of systems. So demonstrating product agility is also important. You know, is this tool something that can easily integrate with all the different systems that the enterprise has, and can they all work together? And then the last thing I'll add to that is that flexibility of the tool matters a lot, because no one wants to rip and replace at the drop of a hat. Enterprises spend months and months evaluating and implementing. So building something modular, something that can fit within their existing stack and that can really help augment their existing tooling is one thing to look for.
Perfect. Yeah. And just hearing these three to four different things that you mentioned, I'm assuming that these are probably characteristics that Workbench probably looks for in companies when they're thinking about investing in them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also a lot of what we're hearing from our enterprise customers itself. You know, part of the Workbench model is that we host these corporate roundtables every quarter. So we have deep tentacles into the enterprise from, you know, folks like the leading banks and asset managers on Wall Street to companies like J&J and Kuten Bose. So hearing from them what the requirements are for them to buy into those solutions is, you know, we're using this as a starting point. And so when we evaluate these tools ourselves, we sort of have a checklist of things based off those conversations that we just go down.
I see. So when you said earlier in the intro that you flip the VC model on its head and you work with Fortune 500 companies, this is what you're talking about with these corporate roundtables. So you're kind of like meeting with the end user and client first, finding their pain points, and then seeing what data tools and companies are meeting that
yeah,
solution.
We basically play matchmaking. So we have those deep relationships. We, you know, spend a lot of time with them, you know, understanding what are the top enterprise pain points right now, what is it that they want to invest into, and we go out of our way finding those companies. And we also use them as a way to back channel. So, you know, if we're looking into a space and we have questions around the product, is it something that people really appetite there? We sort of use this network to tap into for that.
That's great. Yeah, I think I love this model of flipping the VC model on its head. It's a really interesting way to look at things. So moving on to the subject of data engineering, the last episode I actually spoke with someone who works in data engineering at Canva, talked about the different data pipelines he's working with, how they migrated to Snowflake, and it changed everything about their data warehouse. I know that you wrote a blog post about the rise of data engineering. And I'm curious, actually, first of all, I'm curious, how do you do your research for these blog posts? They're super well written. And I'm curious, like, what's your process for research and writing?
Okay, so the research part that I learned from my previous manager at Workbench, Vipin, and the way he used to go at it was, you know, he would spend a ton of time talking to real engineers, real scientists who are on the groundwork and facing those problems. Having those conversations helps you uncover like some of the pain points that people are experiencing in their day-to-day. Mm-hmm. The other way to go about it is really taking the time and, you know, either attending conferences, data conferences, or watching videos online. YouTube is an amazing resource for all of these things. So I actually spend a lot of my time like going through Data Council, watching demos in real time, and just reading off engineering blogs from the big tech people. You know, they are constantly writing about tools that they're building internally. And so I try to see if there is a particular pattern or trend that is emerging from the type of tools that are being created. And I sort of use this as a starting point for my research. And then obviously going back and talking to other investors and understanding if there is an appetite for investment there.
Wow, it's super thorough. I'm guessing you've also come across the FirstMark YouTube series, or their meetups too. I know they're potentially a competitor, but I think their meetups and online events are really good too.
Yeah. Have a ton of respect for Matt. And I think, you know, he brings on amazing speakers on the show, and it's such a learning experience for me as well.
Mm-hmm. So sorry, we kind of veered off topic a little bit. So back to data engineering, can you speak more about, from your research, what has given to the rise of data engineering, that profession, versus data scientists or even like data analysts? It seems like this is like a really hot new profession. Curious to get your perspective.
Data has really changed the face of the world. You know, there's been a lot of changes in the data tooling stack, especially around ETL and data modeling. And so as those tools have evolved in the data stack, so did the people who use them.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think the merging of all these different roles is, and getting people to collaborate more, is definitely a big trend. So obviously in your shoes, you probably see a whole different slew of companies in the data engineering space and the data space in general. Can you talk about some interesting companies and tools you've seen in the data engineering space and how they're really creating innovation?
Open source data transformation tool built around SQL. So the vision here is really to democratize access to the transformation layer so that it's accessible to data analysts, right? So instead of them having to wait for an engineer to do the work, data analysts are now empowered to perform these complex transformations in SQL using DBT, which I think is a step change, in the way these different roles across. And then, you know, within the world of data ops, I think there's been an emergence of metadata-driven tools that are modernizing the data catalog, with the purpose being to enable better discovery and governance across data assets, especially as data becomes more self-serve. And so when I look at the modern data stack today, where it's becoming easier to ingest, transform, analyze data, I feel like there's still a lot of work to be done around enabling trust, governance, and transparency around, you know, what does your data really mean? You know, where is the data coming from? How is the data changing over its life cycle? What is the compliance of that data, right? And so there is a proliferation of tools that are both open source and closed source, especially from big tech companies. And there are tools like Data Hub, Amundsen, Marquez, Data Portal, Nemo, and a few others that are really going after this problem space. And I think this is interesting. It's an interesting category as a whole, because the breadth of these, of some of these tools, is such that they can tackle a broad range of use cases, from data quality to pipeline monitoring to data auditability and so on. This remains one of my favorite topics to research within data operations. And I know it's a top of mind item for a lot of data practitioners as well.
Very cool. The you mentioned metadata driven tools. And this is like a new term, I suppose, I've been hearing more and more about. And I know you also wrote a blog post about this as well. Can you give a quick introduction to what metadata tools and companies do?
Yeah, so metadata basically means data beyond your data. So what these tools are doing is they're able to capture rich information about data. And so they go deep into the infrastructure and capture that data as data flows across the pipeline. And the whole point is, you know, if you're able to catalog it into one single source of truth, this can offer a consistent way of looking at your data. So you can see all the different and important attributes about it. And you could map out the lineage and do things like understanding what's causing a delay in the data, right? If you're expecting the data to be here an hour ago, the data is not here yet. going through that lineage graph and understanding what's causing that backlog is so important, especially when you're doing things like pipeline debugging. It also gives you a view of how the data is being transformed, right? And so you can make sure that the health of the data is preserved throughout its life cycle. So this is really the whole problem around data quality, making sure that the data is always fresh, that the data is accurate, and the data is, you know, the way that you would want it to be presented. So it really captures a lot of problems that affect data as it's being transported from one source to the other.
Gotcha. And you mentioned a little bit about open source versus closed source tools. It just led me to think about how do you and Workbench think about evaluating commercialized tools versus, you know, open source tools, what the opportunity is, what the market looks like, because I imagine they serve two different purposes, but curious to get kind of like the VC's perspective on that.
You know, I'd say that we're agnostic to the open source versus closed source approach, so we don't have a strong preference to either. I think it really ends up being what does the end customer really want, right? Mm-hmm. The value of it being open source is that, you know, you have a strong community of developers around it, so it's easy for you to validate if, you know, and just be able to see the how is it being adopted. And I think the value is that they can share feedback and you could quickly iterate on those feedback. So obviously the adoption path for both of these would be very different, but we as a firm don't have a strong preference. It really just ends up being, you know, what is your goal for implementation? Are you aligning with a timely pain point that the enterprise has? And then just taking it from there. But we've seen both of these approaches work.
Gotcha. Earlier on, you said one of the first things you look at companies is for being enterprise ready is how secure is the tool for their clients and their customers. And I saw that you wrote a post about governance, risk, and audit and the landscape of tools that serve this purpose for making sure data is secure. What is this? And it sounds like this was something that came from your corporate roundtables, but I'm curious why you think governance, risk, and audit is so important for enterprises these days.
Yeah, I think, you know, whether you're an early stage company or a late stage company, when you're selling to the enterprise, security, data privacy, and compliance is key. No one wants to be in the news due to a data breach. And now with stricter regulations around the GDPR and CCPA, I feel like companies have a greater obligation to be compliant throughout the life cycle of the business. And, you know, from an enterprise standpoint, for large organizations that are contracting with multiple vendors at the same time, having a way of understanding their vendor's risk profile is so important, right? And so current tools in the market today that are based off risk scores are not the most reliable. So we're seeing that there is a need for a far better solution that helps the enterprise accurately vet their vendor's security posture, and so that they're able to sort of enforce these protocols in an automated way, right? I think mm-hmm. the tools that we've outlined on the landscape are sort of rethinking how security, how vendor risk management needs to be done. And, you know, there is this whole category around SOC 2 compliance, companies going after SOC 2 compliance. And even there, you know, I think it's a space that's getting increasingly crowded. We're seeing different approaches, some that are focusing more on the evidence collection side of things, and some that are catering directly to the auditor's needs. So, you know, it's an interesting space that we're keeping a close eye on.
Yeah, I haven't seen a landscape of tools like this before. And I see that it's broken out between enterprise and SMB. Do you see a clear difference between tools that are offering governance, risk, and compliance for these two different segments, or is there just kind of like a blend? Because I imagine some of these tools probably serve both.
Yeah, and it's a question that we're actually spending a lot of time thinking through right now, because when you look at some of the earlier companies like that are really focusing around questionnaire automation and really SOC 2 compliance, these companies are really catering to the early stage startups who now have a greater need to be compliant for them to sell to the enterprise. And at the early stage, catering to those early stage companies, but how do you go up the market? And so, yeah, it's a question that I'm still thinking, because, you know, at the top of the funnel, you're looking at other tools that are selling to like bigger enterprise clients where they are.
Gotcha. Yeah, this is definitely a new space for me and some things I don't really know about. So we'll be interesting to follow this and follow you guys as you find more companies that serve this specific need. And I'll definitely include the blog posts that with this landscape of tools in the show notes. This led me to think about, in terms of what Workbench, what you guys provide to some of your portfolio companies, have you seen examples? I'm not sure if you can share, but maybe the company first started with going after mid-market and SMB, but then you quickly advised them to go after enterprise, and you know, you hired like an enterprise account executive and, you know, just shifted their motion. Have you help with these transformations before, or how fast or slow are they? I'm curious if that's something that you've done or kind of help implement with some of Workbench's for portfolio companies.
I haven't been very active on that front, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more so the senior investors on the team that are directly involved in the process. But I'd say that that decision comes very early on. You know, we have playbooks that we, you know, if we've seen something work really well with one of our companies in one particular vertical going after one type of client, we sort of use that playbook to advise our other companies sort of adopting the same path. And, you know, one way to think through that is we host a lot of playbook launches. Are, you know, directed towards, you know, when should you be hiring your first AE, your first SDR, your first VP of sales. So it really helps people to sort of share what they've gone through in their own experience and sort of share those lessons learned with other companies. So, you know, it's easy for folks to learn from one another.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I'll also include this 20 hot new data tools in the early go-to-market strategies post that you wrote in the show notes for people to read more about this.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. The, I guess we'll kind of go a little bit more into some of the projects that you're working on these days. And I know that you recently started the Data Source, this newsletter on Substack, which is what I first read when I think I saw it on Twitter or something like that. Curious about like why you started it. What are your goals for the newsletter for the next 6 months, 1 year? Anything that you want to discuss about the newsletter?
Yeah, so I started the Data Source, which is my monthly newsletter on all things data, data infrastructure, really as a way to share some of the top of mind themes that I'm looking into at Workbench for investment. You know, I realize that I'm always talking to data practitioners and other investors focusing on the space, and there's so much conversations that help me develop my theses and help me evolve my point of view on certain topics. And I felt like sharing those learnings with the broader community would be a great way to keep the conversation flowing. You know, the more you share, the more you get. And so the goal for me really is to expand my network so I can build more touch points with founders and operators and learn from them. Because in my experience, you know, I find it the most helpful when I get to hear from folks who are laying the groundwork in data. So my hope for the newsletter is to engage with more founders, practitioners, other investors, so we can keep on having a meaningful conversation.
Any insight you can share about why you decided to use Substack versus, I guess, just Medium or some other platform? I know Substack is becoming super hot these days, but
yeah,
just curious to hear your perspective.
I think from a newsletter standpoint, I mean, I've experienced both, but I don't think you could run a newsletter, at least I haven't tried, through Medium And so we actually use Medium for our Workbench posts. So I wanted you to just build something that's more me as an investor, you know, from a branding perspective. So having something that's clearly articulating my focus from an investment perspective, I felt that, you know, just like the whole designing feature with Substack, although a little bit limited at this point, was the best way to do so. And I've seen a lot of my friends in VC adopting Substack. So I've seen it work. And, you know, I just jumped on the train. I was like, why not? Let's give that a shot. And so far, you know, it's been a fun ride.
For sure. Yeah, looking forward to seeing more of these monthly editions. Just a few more questions. When you describe the end data consumer, I see this happening a lot with other SaaS tools where you might have like a design tool like Figma or just any other tool. And especially given the pandemic, everyone's trying to think about how do I make this a collaborative tool so that everyone in my organization can partake in my design, in my data, you know, pipeline tool, whatever. So I think that's really kind of in line with what I hear and see in the SaaS space too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So one last question. I know this, it's actually not really a question, but I probably should have sent this to you before we started it. But one thing I like to do at the very end of my episodes is also talk about other related podcasts and blog posts that I've read that are relevant to the data space. And one that came up was from this, I think they're also like a VC called Heavybit. And they have this whole family of podcasts. One of them is called Developer Love. And in episode 12, CeCe Stahl-Smith and Paige Paquette, they started this new consulting firm for creating like a developer-driven marketplace if you have an API. And around minute 15, they talk about how if you want to get a bunch of developers to work on your platform, yes, you should be doing developer advocacy, developer marketing, relations. But one thing they talked about, which I thought was interesting, curious your take, was you should think about if you're a company that has an API, being able to give your customers, your direct customers, early access to the API to allow them to customize things right from the get-go. And one thing they talked about was Slack. So Slack opened up their API for anyone to build custom apps just for their internal organization. And, you know, this is kind of getting into the realm of APIs, but I'm curious if you've seen this type of trend also in your space where, you know, give your customers as much early access to your APIs, to an SDK, so they can start building right away and build customizations that you can't get out of the box. So I know this is kind of throwing a little bit of a curveball at you, but just curious if you've heard about this, seen this with the companies you've seen.
I guess, are we talking about API as a category itself? Because, I mean, I'm not speaking to the data category, but I've seen the emergence of, you know, like tools that are like employee data, like how do you unlock access to those different tools?
Right.
Right. It's sort of like building that infrastructure layer, connecting legacy systems to other type of tools. So you can sort of like create an open platform and unlocking access to data that are otherwise behind closed walls, right?
Yep.
And so there are a few companies out there like Finch, Newcraft, that are sort of building the new employee gateway. So it's delivered over. I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're talking about, but this is what I've sort of noticed.
Mm-hmm.
This whole new, I mean, for lack of a better word of saying it, this whole platform API is sort of what we're seeing. Pinwheel is another one. But yeah, I mean, I haven't really explored that category a lot, but definitely something that's top of mind for a lot of folks.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. I just brought this up because like it made me think about Slack and how their growth really started because they gave developers access to build custom apps on their, you know, internal Slack channels and internal Slack workspaces. And it really led to, you know, I think they have over 500,000 developers now building off of the Slack API to create these custom apps. So just something interesting I thought I'd share.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions I had. And anything more you want to share about what Workbench is doing, what you're doing, anything at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to sort of like going back to my role, it's honestly been a year since I joined Workbench. And this is, you know, like as I spend more and more time in data and data infrastructure, I realize how much more I have to like learn. And so, you know, my goal at this point as a junior investor is to meet more people who could tell me, hey, you're wrong. Like, this is not the way to think about it. Or, hey, this is a new trend that you need to stay on top on, right? So these type of things, you know, just looking to expanding my network, meeting more people so I could, build a bigger network and learn from one another.
Awesome. Yeah, thank that's really great. I'll definitely include all the links you talked about and we talked about in the show notes. And if you are interested in learning more about Workbench, definitely contact Priyanka or the Workbench team in general. And Priyanka, just really thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.